Folks, if your financial professional tends to speak in terms of their industry jargon, can be confusing, but it's important to have clarity, which is why I so recommend Arif Halaby of Total Financial Solutions. My wife Sue and I are Arif's clients because he provided us with such clarity. He is very knowledgeable and capable when it comes to reliable retirement income. Tune into Arif Halaby's show, The Total Financial Hour, Sundays at 11 a.m. on AM 870, The Answer.
The Total Financial Hour is sponsored by TFS Financial Insurance Services, and Total Financial Solutions, Inc.
The information on this show is not intended to be the primary basis for investment decisions and should not be used to provide financial advice. Please obtain the guidance of a financial professional regarding your particular financial concerns. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This program reflects the views of Arif Halaby, California Insurance License 0B93792 of TFS Financial Insurance Services. TFS Financial Insurance Services, California Insurance License Number 0F22477, provides retirement income strategies. Strategies using insurance and annuity products, which are guaranteed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing company.
Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy, learn from Arif Halaby. Learn about financial
power. Good morning, welcome to the show. I'm Arif Halaby, your host, Total Financial Hour, your place for news, talk, and information. Listen, our ideas about financial wellness and well-being and success and retiring happy and profitable are a bit outside the mainstream. I mean, wouldn't you agree? We don't always come at it in the same approach as somebody who says, you know, buy stocks, bonds, and mutual funds and then sell stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. That's not our job. Our job is to help you have reliable retirement income that lasts a lifetime, that never has to count on anybody else canceling you, right? That's a big deal to me. That's why I want you to run for school boards. That's why I want you to sit on water boards, get involved with the PTA, because you have to be able to stand up for our values. And it's very simple. You can do it when nobody else controls your paycheck, right? Because you get a little bit of pushback, don't you? Well, there's always been one or two or three people here in Los Angeles that kind of stand up and adhere to those values that are basically thinking the same as we do, don't aren't they? Sometimes they come at the ideas from a different, maybe unconventional approach. Maybe they have a different or an unconventional background, and yet they seem to come to the same conclusion that success in society also means success financially, that making sure that the family is intact also means that your financial well-being is intact. Well, that person, for me, and probably for most of you, is a gentleman by the name of Larry Elder. He's our guest this hour. We're going to take a break from our normal question and answer program that we normally do because we have guests with the, I guess it's unprecedented. Some would say just outright crazy changes. And we wanted his opinion as a man who's involved politically in California and has taken that standard bearer and been in front of you and me for quite some time. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Arif, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Before we get into the Alvin Bragg thing, I want to give a little commercial about you. You're talking about people stepping into the fray, and you're quite right. A lot of good people don't do that, and there are lots of reasons for that. Obviously, one of them is having everything you've ever done in your life or things you've not done in your life subject to scrutiny, often people lying about it. It's grueling. It's taxing physically. It's taxing emotionally. But the other thing is it's taxing financially. And most people are not in the position of Donald Trump. They're not flush. And I'm certainly not. And this race, if I decide to run for president, just as when I ran for governor of California, it's going to cost me a considerable amount of money because as soon as I announce, I'm no longer on TV, I'm no longer on radio, and I lose that income. And so it is very, very important for people to, as you've been preaching for years, Arif, to make sure that they're financially sound, that their house is in order. It gives you all sorts of options and ability to do other things, such as running for water board, such as running for school board, such as running for county commissioner. It isn't just that people don't like politics and don't want to get into it. It's that often they cannot take the financial hit. I told you for years, if I had known you earlier, years earlier before you and I started working together, I would have been far better off from that standpoint. So yes. My favorite quote, think I shared with you once, Arif, about money is from one of my favorite books. It's called Of Human Bondage, written by W. Somerset Maugham. And he said, money is the sixth sense, without which full use of the other five is not possible.
Well, it does make a difference if you have financial backing, both personally and professionally. I mean, we saw what happened with President Trump, how he was able to finance his own campaign. And of course, you never hear that the full 4 years he was in office, he took $1 salary per year and donated the rest. There should have been fanfare around every time he announced. He did the United Negro College Fund at one point. He did various projects across the country. Why wasn't the left up in arms about this president, Mr. Biden? Why aren't they saying, you're wealthy, donate it?
Absolutely. And look at all the lawsuits that have been filed against this man. If he didn't have deep resources, can you imagine? He's really facing four lawsuits right now, counting the one that's just been filed against him, the indictment by Alvin Bragg. He also has a January 6th investigation he has to deal with. He also has the allegation that he pressured a Georgia Secretary of State to, quote, fine, vote for me. And, of course, the Mar-a-Lago classified documents investigation. So this man is under a great deal of pressure, and but for deep resources, I'm not sure he'd be able to defend himself effectively.
Well, there's people like you that have come out adhering to the values that you grew up with and really espousing those in front of the public on this radio station and others in the past, and that made a difference. It makes a difference between us not feeling alone. You know, when I decided 17 years ago to start a radio program on another station, that decision put me out on the forefront. Did we lose clients? Oh, absolutely. Did we have to take some shots? Yeah. Did we get people that didn't like what I did or stood for? But such a small comparison compared to somebody like yourself, Larry, that's come out and stood up to the Democrat left-wing political machine in the state of California. What do you see if you happen to well, now that you're involved a little bit in the political world nationally, any changes? I mean, I want to go down. I've got a list of things, but I also want to do a tick on one of the biggest issues that you've brought up, which is the fatherless homes. Mm-hmm. I think that leads to poverty later on in life, like almost no other symptom.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, if I decide to run, and I'll be making my announcement before the end of this month, before the end of April, the obvious things are the way the borders are porous. We've had 5 million illegal aliens that have come into this country since Biden has been in office, and dozens have been on the terror watch list. And those are the ones that we've caught. How many have gotten through who are on the terror watch list is unknowable. Obviously, the inflation. Obviously, we've gone from being energy dependent to energy independent to energy dependent. Gasoline prices are up. Inflation, of course. There's also the huge, huge issue of learning loss because of the way so many states shut down because of COVID. Before COVID, according to the NELP, which is the National Report Card Test, 85%, believe it or not, Arif, 85% of black eighth graders, these are 13-year-old kids, could neither do math nor read at grade
level.
Holy
moly.
Half of them can't even read at basic reading proficiency levels, which means a substantial percentage of 13-year-old black kids in America are functionally illiterate. And the non-black kids, the white kids, are no great shakes either. When you look at our results compared to our Asian and European counterparts, we're near the bottom.
It's incredible.
We spend more money K through 12 than any other industrialized country, I think, with the exception of Luxembourg and Switzerland. We're getting really poor results. So those are the obvious things.
Well, that's where I was going. We've been pouring so much money. They've been forcing, almost near at gunpoint, taking money from teachers and educators through these unions. They've been forcing that the California Constitution requires 40% of all dollars that collect in the state to be delivered towards education. Now, that doesn't mean administrators, because they add that in. They also add in some of the building costs. They just recatalog it and say, we're going to build another school or add another solar project. And yet we still get bad results. What are your thoughts from a national level? What can we do to push those numbers into a better place?
Well, we need to have school choice. The money should follow the child rather than the other way around. That's one of the reasons Gloria Romero, who used to be the Senate state majority leader when she was in the Senate, crossed over and supported me when I ran for recall because
I remember that.
The schools that they're in the inner city are the ones that need the best teachers and the best principals, and often end up getting the worst teachers and the worst principals. It's something called the turkey trot, the dance of the lemon. So the teacher comes out. Teacher's a bad teacher. They have the teacher in some sort of suburban area. The parents complain, and they move the teacher rather than fire to some area where the parents don't complain. And often, unfortunately, that's the inner city. You've got Baltimore, where there are 13 public high schools in Baltimore. They're all in the inner city. Produce a school where 0% of the kids can do math at grade level.
Unbelievable.
And another half a dozen where only six can. So that's half of all the public high schools in Baltimore where either 0% or only 1% of the kids can do math at grade level. And again, it's not about the money. It's not about racism. You look at Baltimore, where Freddie Gray died in police custody. The mayor at the time was black. The number one and number two people running the police department were black. There were six officers who were tried. Three of them were black. A judge before whom two of the officers tried their cases, and by the way, found them not guilty, was black. City council, all Democrat, majority black. The state attorney who brought the charges is black. The city superintendent for schools is black. The county superintendent for schools is black. At the time, the USAG, Loretta Lynch, was black, as was, by the way, the president of the United States. And we're talking about systemic racism. It's ridiculous.
You know, I see this as a cop-out on a regular basis, because the moment you open your mouth and you try to bring a solution, everybody calls you a racist. And then people cower back down because they don't want to lose their job or their status in society. You know, polite society, the moment that word is used, people recoil. It's become a worthless accusation now. And we have, in the second hour, we're going to be talking to Carl Goldman, KHTS, College of the Canyons in northern L.A. County. Wait till you hear who is coming to speak. She is a avowed communist, and I'll leave it at that, an anti-American and really hates white people. I mean, she says it. So we allow these people to kind of permeate into society, and now it almost feels like there's no hope. I don't know, Larry. I'm sure people have come and told you that they feel like there just isn't hope.
Well, one more thing about schools before we leave that topic. There was a study some years ago, and it examined where government teachers sent their own school-age kids. Nationwide, around 10% of us have our kids in private schools. About 6% of black families have their kids in private schools. But they found out that in Philadelphia, among the government school teachers with school-age kids, 49%, Arif, have their own kids
49.
In private schools. In Chicago, it was 39%. Here at LAUSD, it's around 28%. So the people who know the school system the best, i.e. the government school teachers, aren't putting their own kids in them.
Oh, and I have clients.
It's the equivalent, Arif, of opening up a restaurant, putting up a big sign saying, come on in, eat the food. We sure won't.
That's a great example. I'll tell you, of my clients that are educators, and we have a lot of them, I don't know, I've thousands of clients over the years. Many of them don't have children, so that's always interesting. They say, I've got my fill at the office, right? I don't have kids. Mm-hmm. I'm a single lady. It's kind of different. Raising somebody else's child 6, 7, 8 hours a day is certainly different than having your own kids. I know I'm going to get a little pushback, but I understand it. I get it. But at the same time, of those, they won't put their kids in their own public school. Most of them are private school. And that's important you understand that, because if the food is not good enough for you to eat, how are you going to funnel an idea to that person when the teacher doesn't even believe in it? And they don't.
Well,
I mean, across the board, they don't.
Well, that's right. And how are we going to have a functioning republic where a substantial number of our citizens cannot critically think? They cannot read, write, and compute at grade level. How can we continue to have a country? How can we continue to innovate? How can we continue to compete against the rest of the world? How can we defend ourselves against the aggressiveness of China? And that brings us to the other thing that you mentioned a moment ago, Arif, and that is fatherlessness. In 1965, there was a booklet called The Negro Family, A Case for National Action, written by a guy named Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was a Democrat, later on became a Democrat senator for New York. At the time, 25% of black kids entered the world without a father in the home, married to the mother. He thought that was horrific. He attributed it largely to slavery and Jim Crow, but he thought that number was horrific, and we needed to do something about it. Well, fast forward, now it's 70% of black kids who enter the world without a father in the home, married to the mother. 50% of Hispanic kids do. 25% of white kids now do. Altogether,
wow.
40% of American kids enter the world without a father in the home, married to the mother. And forget about elder. Barack Obama once said a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and commit crime, 9 times more likely to drop out of school, and 20 times more likely to end up in jail. Now, the question we ought to be asking ourselves is, how do we go from having 25% of black kids entering the world without a father in the home, married to the mother in 65, to over 70% today? And the answer is the welfare state. We've incentivized women to marry the government, and we've incentivized men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility.
It's amazing when the state figures that it can be the place to raise your children, when at the same time, both the state and the federal, but you know, the state as in the macro, has sat down and keeps pushing everything from transgender values to America is the worst country in the world. But for slavery, you know, we would all be speaking a different language, and on and on. I think there's some changes that are happening. Folks, I want to give you the phone number so you can reach in and talk to Larry if you'd like, or ask myself or Larry a question. Inside line here is 866-870-5752. That's 866-870-KRLA. 866-870-KRLA. Give us a call if you'd like to talk to Larry. I'll have him on for the entire hour. Larry, one of the other issues that we see on a regular basis with my clients, people walking in the door, is they're worried about Social Security. We've talked about solutions. I've put together my own solutions where I think we should raise the amount from age 62 to age 65. We can do it gradually. We're going to keep pushing that age up a little bit so that people cannot begin Social Security until age 65. I know it's going to hurt some, but you have to push somewhere. And then at the same time, let it continue to grow past age 70 up to age 75. I've got a great system in place that we've put together over the last 5 years that I think can work. I've yet to hear the Democrats do anything except call everybody racist and say you want to throw grandma off the cliff every time somebody wants to improve or fix Social Security. Latest results, 2034, done. 2034, right. Nobody will receive 100% of their Social Security check. My contention is I believe it's going to be 2032. And the reason is very simple. We spent 2 years not collecting the taxes by telling people to stay home. Right. You're not essential. Stay home.
Right.
What are your solutions? Any ideas for Social Security?
Well, the main thing is to recognize that not just Social Security, but Medicare and Medicaid are, quote, unsustainable. It is a word that Bill Clinton used years ago when he set up a commission to look into this. It's a word that Barack Obama has used. And so whenever anybody talks about reforming any of these so-called entitlements programs, most people on the left yell and scream and say you're trying to sunset, as Joe Biden said in his last State of the Union speech, these entitlements programs, when in fact members of both parties over the years have said that they are unsustainable. George W. Bush, you might recall, had a plan to allow people to put a portion of their contribution into an account that they can control, that they could put in the stock market, to get a better rate of return. And after a few months of pushing that, Nancy Pelosi said, accused him of trying to privatize Social Security. Privatize is a four-letter word. And then pretty soon the Republicans engaged in the exercise they often engage in, which is running for the hills. And so nothing was done.
They just don't have courage, Larry.
Yeah, the camel kicked down the road.
Yeah.
And that's because these entitlements are third rail. You can't run without the other side saying you're going to take away something from people to whom it is deserved. There are people who are currently on the on Medicare and Medicaid, or will soon be on Medicare and Medicaid, and all you have to do is scare them. They vote, and then they will vote for your opponent because they feel you're trying to do something that will hurt them in the short run. When in fact, in the long run, you've got to do something about these programs because they are, as I said before, unsustainable. I think your
the
plan
longer
has
you
merit.
Wait,
yeah, I think your plan has merit, but I also believe that you know, in the long haul, as you well know, you're an investment advisor. In the long haul, the market is up, and for young people to get into the market early and be able to put something away and have it accumulate by the time they're 65 years old, they'll have a much bigger return than they would if they continued the same old Social Security system. They've done this in England,
if you're young,
in Chile. They've done this in New Zealand.
Right.
and the results have been far, far better. So we ought to at least have that discussion without being mau-mau'd and accused of trying to take away something and sunset Social Security. They're very popular. Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are very popular programs. You're not going to get rid of them, but you can reform them.
Yeah, I think you can improve them. And here's the bottom line. When you look across the board, you know, France has riots. They're burning down Paris and other parts of the state, the country, in smaller towns, and simply because they're trying to move the age from age 60 to age 62. Certainly Americans are going to feel it. But I believe if you give them opportunities to allow some of their funds to go into a guaranteed annuity, to allow some of their funds to go into the stock market, to allow some of their funds, right, that pushes up the opportunity for America, where there's still a floor, there's still a guarantee, but there's the only one way to fix it. You cannot, you know, you can't swim upstream and think it's you're going to be able to do that forever. I want to get Carlos on line one on the line. Carlos from Carson has a question for you, Larry. Go ahead, Carlos.
Hi, Larry. It's great talking to you. I got a question. It's been my observation for quite some time that all these human rights movements, women's rights, gay rights, immigration rights, black rights, Latino rights, whatever you want to call it, children's rights, they've all been infiltrated and co-opted by communist forces who are then manipulated into a collective global revolution. And that's going to be tremendously detrimental to our United States. Am I on the course or not?
I think you are. Look, take a look at this organization called Black Lives Matter. Before they changed it, their website literally attacked the nuclear intact family. The co-founders are self-described trained Marxists. Marx, as you know, did not believe in God. He was an atheist. He wanted to dethrone God and certainly did not believe in private property or entrepreneurship. And obviously was not somebody who believed in patriotism or Judeo-Christian values. These are the kinds of things, patriotism, Judeo-Christian values, entrepreneurship, and belief in family that allowed America to grow, that allowed black America to grow even after slavery when blacks faced Jim Crow and the KKK. From 1940 to 1987, the black poverty rate went from 87% to 47%, a 40-point reduction in that 20-year period of time, the greatest 20-year period of economic growth in the history for black people in America. Why? It was rare for a kid to be brought into the world without a father. It was rare for a kid to be brought up in a household that was not religious, a belief in entrepreneurship, and a belief in patriotism, even if America was not living up to its values. All of these, Carlos, are under assault. You are spot on.
And I think, Carlos, when you look at the grinding in their minds of they're a victim, and but for the world and generally white male Christians, they would have a shot at life that's different than their own abilities can take them. I think when you have that level of victimization drilled into a child from the time they're young, and that they can't control certain things about their destiny, they can't control decisions that they make, they're made for them. I think people start making financial decisions that lead them into this world of poverty, and then forever blame somebody else for it. It's a one-way street.
You know, Eric, I was talking.
Are these movements satanic in nature? Is that the essence of them, an anti-God movement?
Well, I think it's both, Carlos. I think it's when you divide the United States, right? The different a state, if you look at the United Nations, but for the name being United States already taken, the United Nations would have been called the United States because a state is a country. And when the United States was formed, we had 13 small little countries that decided to give up certain rights towards a federal or a central power that in turn allowed them to have benefits in return, things like protection and standardization of currency and economies, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Well, when the United States was formed, you had people from all over Europe. They never existed together before. You had Finnish and Norwegian and French and Italian, and you had people all over the United States that came from different places all over Europe, and now we're getting along. And that was uncommon. It was unheard of. So the United States, its power is its togetherness. When the left started doing, and I was doing this on my radio show over a decade ago when Harvard was having second graduations or different graduations for black law students, law grads, and Yale's followed suit, and then they did sororities and fraternities. I thought, oh, this is not going to end well because you're dividing this, quote, United States. Did you see that? I'm sure you did, Larry, way back when. That was part of it.
Yeah, and it's only gotten worse. You're still finding these separate graduation ceremonies, separate open houses for parents of black children, of Hispanic kids. You're still finding this cannibalization, and it's not good. Eric, we're talking about what we can do in order to improve some of these so-called entitlements programs. The other thing we can do, the 10,000-pound elephant in the room, is we can improve the economy, grow the economy bigger. You know, I was on Fox
yes.
and Friends once, and I said that America, at all three levels, federal, state, and local in 1900, took less than 10% in terms of taxes from the American people. And now they take about 32%. And if you add some sort of value or cost to the mandates, as when you're running a business and the government comes in and tells you you have to buy something you don't think you ought to buy, that's almost 50% of what what government takes from the American people at all three levels. I get a phone call from one of these left-wing fact-check organizations, Arab, and he says, Larry, what was your source for saying that in 1900, at all three levels, federal, state, and local, the government took less than 10%? I gave him a source. What's your source for right now that takes about 32%? I gave him a source. What's your source right now for saying if you...
Basically, you did their job?
Yeah. I gave him several sources. So they do an article, and they say Elder is half right. On the point I made about government at all three levels taking less than 10%, Elder's right. On the second point right now, 32%, Elder's right. On the third point, that's subjective because if you're running a business, the government comes in and tells you to buy something, it's difficult to tell whether or not that forced
all right.
purchase.
We got to take a quick break, Larry. We're going to take a quick break. We're at the bottom of the hour. Be right back. Total Financial Hour. I'm Arif Halaby. Stay with me with special guest Larry Elder. Give us a call, 870-5752.
Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy. Learn from Arif Halaby. Learn about...
Hey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for staying with me. Special guest Larry Elder. I'm Arif Halaby. Total Financial Solutions, TFS Financial Insurance Services. You can call in and talk to Larry, talk to myself. We have an open line for you, 866-870-5752. That's 866-870-5752, 866-870-KRLA. Special guest Larry Elder. Larry has been real politically active. You have a couple of movies that have come out, I think, in the last few decades anyway. I've seen two of them. And what I've seen is this ability, Larry, for you to be able to communicate a message very cleanly and simply, meaning the ability for people to get it and almost for common sense to prevail, even if somebody didn't agree with you walking into that movie or walking into that show. If you were to be a candidate for president, is that something you think you can transfer to that same message?
I think so. You know, I've been talking and writing about issues now for almost 40 years, through TV, through radio, and through my syndicated column that I've had since April of 1998. Think about that. April 1998, I've written a column per week. I think I've missed one week for Christmas. So that's over 1,200 columns about foreign policy, domestic policy, energy, immigration, race, you name it. I've given a position about it. So I think that I've got the ability, hopefully, to explain things in ways that the average person can understand, and maybe I can move the needle in the right way. The films you're talking about are Uncle Tom 1 and Uncle Tom 2, and you can see them both by going to UncleTom.com or go to YouTube. Right? By the way, I also have a political action committee called ElderForAmerica.com. That's ElderForAmerica.com. So tell Carlos to throw something in the tip jar. And I've got a book coming out in the first week of September about my race for governor and about my possible race for president. It's called As Goes California, and you can pre-order it right now on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble.
You know, California, Larry, is still receiving a negative population growth. I think we're somewhere around 2,000 people a day still leave the state of California. And
right.
They go to parts unknown, you would think, right? Like, who knows? Where are they going? Why are they leaving? Well, there's IRS databases where mm-hmm. we can track where the people move and where the dollars
right.
move.
That's right.
I've been tracking that for years for personal investment, for clients that have decisions where to move, what to do. So we know where those people are moving. It's not a secret. It's not as if California didn't know we're losing these people. It seems like the middle class. Now, Epic Times came out recently. I think it's Epic Times and published a piece on the middle class and the upper middle class are leaving. We've been saying this for 5 years. You're losing an enormous tax base. Since, what is it, 43% of Californians pay no income tax?
And I think, Eric, you're the one who told me about that website that shows you where the dollars are going.
Yes.
And they're going to Florida, they're going to Texas, they're going to places where the tax burden is lower. The number one reason that young people cite for leaving California is that they cannot afford a home. And the average price of a home in California is 175% above the national average. The other reason are the schools. As I mentioned, they're near the bottom of all 50 states, even though we're in the top third in terms of per student expenditures. Then you got crime,
yes,
and you got homelessness. And you're right about the tax base, the uneven nature of it. We have the highest state income tax in America, 13.3% above a certain level, and literally about 1% of all the taxpayers in California pay half of those state income taxes. So when the stock market goes down, all of a sudden a big revenue stream goes away, and you have these huge swings. We went from having a surplus Gavin Newsom bragged about now to having about a $20 billion deficit in our budget. And our,
yes,
don't get me started on our unfunded pension liabilities. Okay, you got me started. $1.5 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. That's by far the worst in America. The only state that's probably more mismanaged than California is perhaps Illinois.
That's right. You're exactly right. That's good. You have the numbers right on track from a guy who's in that world. And I'll tell you this, folks. When you look at the pension, here's what I think is going to happen. Many of you are collecting pensions now and or will be in the future. They have to file bankruptcy. Now you're going to call it something else, a default, whatever it is. My opinion is they are going to have to make changes to your, quote, pension. There just isn't the money. It's not a political thing. It's not, oh, Gavin Newsom, you know, chose the wrong hair gel this week. It's simple. There just isn't the money. And when you're chasing out people that are making money and you're not taxing the bottom 43% of America, of Californians, then surprise, people will vote for things like, oh, yeah, I think you should rob Peter to pay Paul.
Yep.
Yeah, Paul, you'll always have Paul's support on that deal.
Well, you're right, and something has to happen. The money is not there, which means services are going to be cut. At some point, the amount of money going to schools is going to be cut. You're going to require people to contribute more to their pensions, or you could figure out some sort of way of filing bankruptcy and giving everybody a haircut. Now, there's arguments that legally a state cannot do that. There are also arguments legally that a state can, but something has to happen. The money is not there.
Yeah, exactly. What will happen is they'll do the same thing they did to San Bernardino, Stockton, California, Mammoth Lakes, Detroit, the state of Rhode Island. They all had to file some sort of, quote, reorganization. Mm-hmm. The way you and I see it on a daily basis, it's called bankruptcy. Let's talk about this, Larry. When I see people on a regular basis trying to figure out how to pay for their child's college, when I started in the financial world, it was about probably about $100 billion in student loan debt. And that was unsustainable. We couldn't believe it. Today, we're $1.5 trillion. I mean, it's just off the charts. It all changed in the last 10 years. Before that, it was relatively stable, kind of stayed in a range, if you will. Today's student loan debt is off the charts, and it's handicapping those young people.
That's right.
Any solutions, any ideas, any things that we can do to fix,
create a better situation? Well, the first thing is, why is college so expensive? And the answer is because the government's gotten involved in basically giving anybody a loan to go to college, no matter what his or her major is, no matter whether or not that major will ultimately produce a job that you can use to pay back your loan. We have all these bureaucrats in colleges. When you look at the growth in colleges, the money goes to bureaucrats. Often things,
yes,
for
that's right,
diversity, equity, and inclusion, and outreach, and all sorts of other nonsensical kinds of things that add up the cost of a college. The other thing to tell people is, ultimately, it really doesn't matter what school you went to. Ultimately, what matters is your work ethic, your drive, your energy. I've seen studies that show people that got into Harvard and chose not to go for whatever reason, either because of the expense or because they didn't want to leave home or whatever, and they went to a lesser competitive, less prestigious school. And in about 10 or 15 years, the amount of money that they were earning was the same as the amount of money that were being earned by the kids that got into Harvard and went there. So the school is less important than your drive, your aptitude, your willingness to work hard, your willingness to get along with other people. My long way of saying that there are cheaper schools. You don't have to go to a really expensive school. You can go to a much cheaper school and get a good education, save money, and again, over the long haul, the amount of money you're going to make will be about the same because your aptitude is about the same.
That's right. And I've always said, you and I both own companies. We both have hired and sometimes, unfortunately, fired, you know, people over the years. And of all the dozens and dozens of employees that have come through any of my companies, it's always been the same thing. I never ask them, what are you getting on your 11th grade history test? How did you do, you know, in your junior year of college? I don't care about any of that. I say, are you going to show up on time? Are you going to steal from me? You're going to get along well with others. Are you going to have a good attitude when you come in? Are you right? I mean, we care about the things that are difficult to measure on a report card. And I think folks come in and say, well, didn't you understand? I got a 4.4 at Harvard or Yale. Nobody cares. 8 minutes after you're hired, now we care about how you get along well with others.
Yeah. In the short run, you can make an argument that the school matters because the assumption is if you've gone to school A, you've got aptitude A. But over the long haul, nobody cares. They care about whether or not you were able to produce. They care about your record. They care about whether or not you got along with other people. They care about your track record. So over the long haul, it really doesn't even matter. So it doesn't hurt to go to a much less expensive school.
Yeah, and I understand the argument that says, I want to be a lawyer in the political world. Fine, Georgetown Law, you have to pay for it. It's the way it goes. I want to be in mathematics or scientists. Okay, probably MIT is a good place to start. So there are places, but most people are getting sociology degrees, communication degrees. Mm-hmm. Most people are forgetting that community college is a great place to start. We required that, Larry. All three of my children had to go to community college for at least 2 years or the equivalent of an associate's degree before they went on to a four-year university. I wanted them to play, practice, try that. Oh, I thought I wanted to be a scientist. Nope, I want to be a musician. Nope, I want to be, right? Play for $50. I can do that. But the problem is people go in for 5, 6, 7 years, you know?
Yeah, and Charlie Kirk has written a book, very compelling, which says a lot of people don't even need to go to college. Especially in a world where, because of AI and tech, things are changing so rapidly. Imagine if Steve Jobs had stayed in college the whole 4 years. He would have lost a great deal of time. The ability to respond to a market need would have gone away. There are a lot of very, very sharp people, studies have shown, that don't need to go to college at all. So it isn't for everybody, which is why it's so offensive for Joe Biden to come in and give student debt forgiveness. The majority of Americans have not gone to college and certainly have not gone to graduate school. And the average person who's gone to college, let alone graduate school, is either making or will make more money than the average person who did not. And they're having their debt forgiven, and that debt burden is being borne by people who didn't go to school, didn't go to college. It's offensive.
So what kind of solutions do you have up your sleeve when it comes to something like the $1.5, $1.7 trillion in student loan debt out there? Is there any kind of a solution that you have?
I know
there's two or three out there, but I don't know of one that's going to work.
Yeah. Pay your loans. I went to college. I went to law school. I accumulated student debt. I paid it. I didn't expect anybody else to pay for it. Pay your loans. And if the logic applies there, it should also apply to your mortgage. Why should I pay my mortgage? I took out a mortgage. I promised the bank I'd pay them off. And now all of a sudden I'm complaining because I took out the mortgage voluntarily. Nobody put a gun to my head. Pay it off. What about your car loan? We all have car loans. Why don't we just not stop paying those? The logic behind stop paying your student debt is the same logic that somebody could argue about your mortgage or about your car loan. Pay it off. Ultimately, as I said before, you're going to make more money than the average person who didn't go to college in many instances. And so pay for it. Stretch it out over a period of time. Or consider the school you're going to and consider the cost of that school and consider the fact that you're going to have to ultimately pay it back. Other Americans paid it back. All of a sudden, a whole generation of Americans are not paying their loans. Again, I hate to keep using the same word, but it's offensive to me, Arif.
Yes. You know, I'm with you on all sorts of levels because I used to I had to attend a community college. That's how I got started. And literally, I slept in the truck. I had a pickup truck with a little camper shell. I had a little foam pad in the back, and I would sleep on that in between class because I was working late night jobs, working second jobs, delivering pizza, whatever I had to do. And sometimes I could only crash in the school parking lot, you know, so I'm falling asleep. That's what you do when you're trying to make life. And you know what? It makes you a better person. And we're stripping that from these people by saying it's not your fault. I know that you went to school. I know that you drank nonstop from Friday night to Sunday morning. And now it's time for us to pay for that. You know, you forget that some of these people made those choices. That's a good point. Folks, well, give us a call. 866. Let me give the number out one more time.
Which is to go to a JC for the first 2 years and transfer to another university, a four-year one. Nobody cares that the first 2 years were spent somewhere else. They care about
Your
diploma at USC or UCLA.
That's exactly right. Yep. Nobody knows on the first college you attend, it's the last one. You got to do some minimum classes there. You know, I think it's 60 units or something at the secondary school. 866. Here's the phone number, guys. 866-870-KRLA. I want to give it out one more time. Forgive me for stepping on you, Larry, but I want folks that want to talk to you. It's hard to reach out to you sometimes now that your show is not on AM 870, but we appreciate everything that you do still on Epic Times. Tell us about that show as well.
Well, I do a 4-day-a-week, 1-hour show on Epoch Times, and you can find it by going to Larry with Epoch, EPOCH.com, Larry with Epoch.com. It also airs on cable on the NTD, N like Nancy, T like Tom, D like David channel. You can go to NTD.com to find out where it airs in your community. On Spectrum, which is what I have, it's on channel 23. It comes on 3 times a week. They just do a half hour of it. But if you want to watch the entire show, just go to Larry with Epoch, EPOCH.com to find it.
Folks, that's Larry Elder. I'll give you the number one more time, 866-870-5752. Larry, one of the biggest mistakes that we see in the United States lately is giving up our position on the world stage. As you start to see China come along and brokering deals with Iran and Saudi Arabia, arch enemies, we start to see the position that Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, left us in at the end of his term, which was, literally record-breaking, bringing the United Arab Emirates and a lot of the Gulf states. For those of you that aren't super familiar with this, he put together the oil-producing states and Israel, which is an agricultural dream come true to most of the Middle East since it's a desert land, and took that ability for them to now work together, and that's earth-shattering, going around the Palestinian issue, the Palestinian problem. Well, China comes along and says, oh, yeah, you can do that. I'm going to do one better. I'm going to have Saudi Arabia, who is an arch rival of Russia, or at least was, and is now in the back pocket of China and Russia. We're losing our position, Larry. This is a scary time.
Well, that's right. What you're talking about are what were called the Abraham Accords, where you got all these Gulf states to agree to work together and lower their hostility towards Israel. And the assumption was that Saudi Arabia was going to come into the fold. Well, along comes Joe Biden, and instead of holding Iran's feet to the fire, Saudi Arabia is now afraid that Iran is this close to getting a nuclear bomb. And Saudi Arabia says, okay, well, America's not with me. I might as well try to negotiate some sort of deal with Iran to lower their hostility towards us. So the whole Abraham Accords is now completely falling apart. And the bigger problem, the bigger geopolitical problem, of course, is that our dependency on China for all sorts of things, including military components. There's a big push for us to, by 2030, I think it is, for almost all the or half of the new cars being sold in America to be electric vehicles. Well, the batteries for electric vehicles have what are called rare earth minerals. And that's lithium, cobalt, nickel. And guess who controls that? Either produces it in their country or controls other countries where it is produced, where these things are produced, and that's China. So we're becoming increasingly more dependent upon China for all sorts of things, for our supply chain. We saw when we had supply chain issues, there's so much stuff we don't make here anymore, and we have to wean ourselves from China. China has infiltrated our universities by setting up all these chairs. So China's getting all this great PR, and they have publicly said they want to control the world, they want to dominate the world, and they are now have a bigger military than we have. Their military spending is greater. They appear to be ahead of us in AI and what are called hypersonic missiles. This is probably one of the most perilous times the world has ever seen.
Well, making your case for a potential candidacy for President of the United States, what is your position when it comes to standing up to China? President Trump says he would end the Ukraine war in 24 hours. He makes similar notions to putting China in its place. Where do you see some of the actions you can take to make that happen?
Well, I would continue what Donald Trump did, was to punish China for stealing our technology, and also to pressure other countries not to deal with China. You know, one of the reasons we won the Cold War is because we strangled the Soviet Union economically. Mm-hmm. Other countries united, so they didn't do business with Russia. The opposite is happening here. More countries are doing business with China, and China is getting rich and powerful with American and Western dollars. That's got to reverse. We have to start building stuff here stateside. We have to wean ourselves off of relying on China for components, including military components, for crying out loud. We can't let them keep buying land here in America, land near defense installations. And every single one of these exchange students coming in from China, they are required to transfer knowledge and technology to China as part of the deal for these foreign students. And colleges like UCLA and others love having these Chinese students because, unlike American kids, they pay full tuition. Well, this is a big, whopping Trojan horse that China has sent to our country and has infiltrated virtually every aspect of American life.
Sure has. And they have a long-range goal, and that is they're a patient group. They're a patient people. They are not somebody who needs instant gratification. Folks, you're talking to Larry Elder. I want to back up and give you a little bit of his background. Brown University, Michigan School of Law. Not a dummy when it comes to both formal education, the law. Ran his own law firm, I think, as a scholar when it comes to the law. Today we're talking about President Trump being indicted on every news channel, and sometimes you see fireworks being shot off in the background of MSN, as you call them, MSDNC, as if it's the new 4th of July.
MSNBC Haw.
That's what it is. Yeah, Hee Haw. If you're older than, what, maybe 45, you don't know what Hee Haw is, but I do remember it. There was one of the shows we watched. Anything to – you know, you're listening to both sides of this, and, oh, President Trump, that poor guy is getting hit left, right, and center. Can you imagine – I know it's fairy tale, but if you could imagine if the left would have – left wing would have just been – and that's what we need to call them, left wing. If the left wing would have just been just normal, tit for tat, baloney that the, you know, the political party that's not in power, the opposition – they push and pull. They call you names. Imagine if they just would have done that instead of this all-out assault from the NSA, CIA, and you know those guys that went after him and all sorts of, you know, three-letter agencies. Imagine if they would have just let him go. What kind of world would we be in? My gosh, military-industrial complex would be laying off people. We'd have peace and almost daisies, you know, walking down the street with in your hand.
Eric, I've never seen anything like it. I've lost two very good friends. By that, I mean friends of over 40 years because of my support for Donald Trump. They're Americans who don't talk to other Americans across the fence line, next door neighbors, because of Donald Trump. I've never seen I call it Trump derangement syndrome. It is a pathology. Maybe someday they'll develop a vaccine. Look, this indictment by Alvin Bragg is based upon what normally would be a misdemeanor with a two-year statute of limitations. So he has some sort of cockamamie legal theory to expand the statute. Even then, the statute has ended. The FEC, which is an independent agency, looked at all of this, the hush payments, and voted 4-1 not to continue an investigation. The DOJ dropped their investigation. Alvin Bragg's predecessor, Cyrus Vance, the then Manhattan DA, dropped his investigation. Even Bragg, when he first came in, said he wasn't going to continue the investigation, and two DAs quit, one of whom wrote a book excoriating Bragg for not pursuing charges, and it worked. He buckled, and then he brought these charges, even though just years earlier he said he wasn't going to do it. It's all bogus, and the double standard just smacks you in the face. Hillary has an unsecured server in her basement on which she sent and received classified information, a clear violation of the Espionage Act, which does not require intent. And James Comey does his big presentation, talks about how reckless she was, how careless she was, and then says she lacked the intent to violate the statute when the statute does not require intent. And Bill Clinton paid, what, $800,000 to Paula Jones after he claimed that her allegations lacked merit. John Edwards paid $1 million to a mistress, and that went to trial, and he was not convicted. The whole thing is absolutely absurd. And it's all because Trump is running for office again. If he weren't running, do you really believe that they bring these charges? And finally, this guy got about $1 million indirectly from George Soros, from a George Soros organization, and he ran with a campaign pledge to get Trump before one word of testimony had been taken. Talk about somebody who's politically motivated. It ought to offend everybody and not just people who are Trump supporters, because once you're allowing local DAs to do this, we could do that too. We could do that with Hunter. We could do that with James Biden. We could do that with Joe Biden. We could do that with our political enemies. Once you've crossed this Rubicon, and they've done so, you've now unleashed forces that I think you don't realize and that you cannot control.
You're completely correct. Larry, we have about a minute left. I want to talk about, as we finish up, do you think listen, they're playing, they're bringing guns to a knife fight, right? We're still fighting with baseball bats and bricks, and they're fighting with guns. And when you think about this, you go, it's just an uneven fight, right? They're using the Department of Justice. They're going after the folks that were let in and walked around the Capitol building and calling them insurrectionists. And yet these people took over the Portland City Council, as well as police stations, and then Tennessee's State House, and nobody's going after them. Are you going to start seeing a tit for tat, or maybe it's just justice that conservative state attorney generals need to get involved?
Unfortunately, you're going to see both, but I think you're going to see a lot of tit for tat. I'm reminded of the ending of that movie Tora Tora Tora. It turned out that the admiral, Japanese admiral, never said this, but he said after Pearl Harbor, "I fear that we have awakened a sleeping giant and filled him with unshakable anger."
That's right. That's right, folks. Thank you, Larry Elder, folks. Larry Elder, will he run for president? We're going to find out in the coming weeks. Thanks for staying with me. Next hour of the program, I have Carl Goldman, owner of KHTS Radio. He's going to talk about an interesting thing that's happening in the Northern LA County. Special show this week, as we're talking and interviewing a lot of folks. And the reason is simple. Things are happening now that are affecting your finances, and you're going to see how when we come back. The Total Financial Hour, I'm Arif Halaby. Stay with me. 888-99-RETIRE. That's how you get a hold of me. We'll be right back.
Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Now higher income strategy. Learn from Arif Halaby.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Arif Halaby. Total Financial Hour, talking about your family's finances, of course, getting out of debt, managing money, planning for the future. That's what it's all about. I wanted to share something with you because I think it's pretty important that you understand what's happening in our society and happening in even some of the more conservative parts of the county and of the city and certainly of Southern California, because there's only a few of those places left, right? I mean, when you think about this, there's really, maybe Simi Valley, certain parts of Orange County, Santa Clarita, right? That's our hometown, is where our main office is located. You think about this and you ask yourself, you know, we're losing some of our influence in the state. You know, I don't expect Carl Goldman, who's our guest here in just a minute, to agree with me or even to comment on it. But I'm telling you that I think we have a feckless state senator who's supposed to be head of the GOP. And okay, so what does that mean? The Republican Party is worthless in the state. Why? Well, very simple. You haven't done anything. I don't know how to measure. Oh, we raise a lot of money. Oh, good for you. You drive nice cars. Nice. What about the people? Oh, but you don't understand. You know, we get a bill passed. No, you don't. They changed the name on the bill. Every time a state assemblyman submits a bill, and it's a good one, and it's from the conservative side of the thing, the speaker of the assembly takes it, gets your name off, puts one of his underlings on, maybe somebody who's struggling, who somebody hasn't done anything, and puts their name on it. So my point is, the state of California Republican Party has got very little to do with making a difference. And so I share that with you because who's fighting for you? I don't know who. We just had Larry Elder on the show. You know, he's now taken his fight both state and nationally. But who's fighting for you on a local level? I think you have to get involved. I think you have to stand up, because there are some big changes. So what are those changes that are happening in, quote, conservative Common Sense Northern LA County called Santa Clarita. Well, joining us is Carl Goldman, a gentleman who's been in the radio business for 49 years, friends with Mr. Dean. I'll let you share who that person is, if you'd like. Joining the show is Carl Goldman. Hi, Carl. Thanks for being a part of the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Folks, I want you to know, I got my start in radio 17 years ago because this gentleman came to my office and we spoke, and I said, I want to do a radio show. And he mentored me, helped me, guided me. And but for him, I would definitely not have a show. You wouldn't be listening to us here on AM 870. But he gave me a shot on local radio in Southern California. So I really appreciate him and his wife, Jerry. Carl, the change that is happening to the conservative parts of the county and certainly Southern California is astonishing. And because it's happening at such a high rate. So where I'm speaking of is a frequent receiver of the brunt of my at least fiscal mismanagement. And I think that's College of the Canyons. And I say fiscal mismanagement because the chancellor or grand poobah, I'm not sure what she's calling herself today, Diane Van Hook, who makes somewhere in the neighborhood of almost $40,000 a month, $10,000 a week. We can do the math together, folks. That's $2,000 a day. Lives in Newport Beach, doesn't even live in the community, is taking money from the state, and in turn is supplying it with what? A communist? A Marxist? Who's coming to speak at the COC, College of the Canyons, Performing Arts Center?
Well, Arif, what's startling in all this is we've owned the radio station in Santa Cruz since 1990, and my wife Jerry and I have been giant supporters of College of the Canyons since day one. In fact, you and I have disagreed about some of the issues involving COC, but this one has us scratching our heads. Coming to speak in a few weeks will be a former member of the Black Panthers who is a avowed Marxist. She ran two times for vice president of the American Communist Party, and I'm talking about Angela Davis, quite a controversial figure.
Now, Angela Davis, Carl, let's be clear. When I was a Los Angeles police officer, and we had a lot of these people were blowing up cars in the 70s and 80s, had wars on police, firebombing police stations. She was part of that group. But she actually has even a more controversial background, I guess similar to the Weather Underground from President Obama's days. What is Angela Davis's background there?
Yeah, back in 1970, she had a arsenal of guns in her house, including a shotgun that she had purchased 2 days earlier, and gave it to three of her cohorts, who then went to a Marin County courthouse because some of their other cohorts were on trial, and they let loose an arsenal of bullets, killing four people, including the judge. Angela Davis later served over a year in prison because she was an accessory to the murders, but she was later acquitted. And I remember I was in college at the time, and there was just a giant call to free Angela Davis. So this was headlines for 2 years. But as you're right, Arif, it was, you know, a whole attack on our system back then.
Well, the left-wing Angela Davis decided to go and earn her doctorate in East Germany back when they were avowed enemies of the United States. Folks, you can't get any more of a foundation of hating Americans. And now she's a racist as well. We know that because she's spoken heavily. Now, listen, I don't have a problem. If she wants to come and speak and College of the Canyons in Santa Clarita wants to have her up, and the board decides this is a good place to spend money. And listen, they spent, well, reports are anywhere between $20,000 and $30,000 for her speaking fee. And you're going to tell me that that is about furthering the education, the communication, the dialogue, the discussion. I love it when they do that, when they put their little pinkies out. Then fine. What you do is you bring in Charlie Kirk and you pay him $25,000, or you bring in, you know, Will Knowles or Dennis Prager, and you have the same decorum, the same respect. Why isn't COC doing this? You've been a supporter of them. I was on the foundation board for a little while, maybe 7 or 8 years there before I saw it nothing more than just a rubber stamping organization for the wishes of the dictator. But tell me what your thoughts are on this move?
Well, Eric, that's what's so upsetting is that well, first of all, let's say something. After we broke the story, I, within an hour or so, got an email from one of the board members at College of the Canyons, and that board member was startled. We released the story before College of the Canyons released a press release, so we surprised the board. They didn't know about it. They were not informed about it, nor did they know that $25,000 was spent to secure Ms. Davis. They also don't know if they also are paying additional fees for travel, hotel, etc. But the most disturbing thing on all this is before we broke the story, we talked to the college and asked them if they were going to invite somebody from a different perspective to cover it, because it's part of a series they call the anti-racism series. And the fine speakers you mentioned a few seconds ago all are anti-racist. And so they could very easily cover anti-racism from a different perspective. The response we got was, we don't see a need for that. And that's what's the most disturbing thing about it, is the college seems to be so tone deaf about this that they no longer need to see a balance. And that's all we're calling for. We agree with you 100% that we don't want to stifle Angela Davis from giving her perspective on the world, which certainly is very different than ours, but don't expose the students to just that one side. Make sure you cover it from different perspectives.
Well, listen, I know some of the board members personally for decades. You do as well. And I care about them, and I don't want them to turn their backs the next time we're at the coffee shop together. But at this moment in time, guys, and maybe some of you are listening, the word coward and lack of courage to stand up for the alternate perspective. You are no different than 1950s Alabama and the right-wing racist KKK not allowing a black kid, a young child, a young lady, a young minority to go to school. You are now bringing in an avowed anti-American, pro-racist, pro-communist to speak at College of the Canyons. Now, I think they can do this, Carl, because in your history, have you ever known conservatives to stand outside and scream and yell and grab somebody by the neck like they did the last few days and hold signs and step on cars and throw Molotov cocktails? No. That's the left wing that does that. So maybe they're just not afraid of conservatives, I guess. Is that it?
That may be part of it. I mean, look at the challenge Ben Shapiro has had appearing at colleges. Every time he appears, there seems to be a riot by the left, and they drown out any of his views, and many colleges no longer accept that. There's another conservative podcast host who made a fortune in Silicon Valley. He graduated from MIT, has the auditorium named after him, and when he was invited by the school to speak at his own named auditorium, the school canceled him at MIT. Can you believe that?
This is the same, folks. This is the moment in time to have courage. I have told you before, the reason that Rosa Parks was able to do what she did is because of something inside that nobody could measure. It's called her heart. It's called courage. She stood up, and there were white people that stood up with her, and there were other black people that said, oh, Rosa, don't make any waves. It's just like today. There are conservatives that say, oh, just don't make any waves. There are some white people that stand with Angela Davis, right? People think this is about racism. It is not. Angela Davis is a racist. It's not me saying it, folks. It's her. She hates white people. You can go to her Wikipedia page. You can see all about her. You can see her going to East Germany, hating Americans, the trials, et cetera. Fine. You're allowed to do that in this country. And you can live in all 50 states. And you can be anti whatever you want or pro whatever you want. My point is, why isn't COC providing the same level of security, the same level for a discussion for students that want to hear or like to hear a different perspective? Why are they drowning this out? Is it because of the one party rule? You know, the leadership there, which is my way or the highway? I'm disgusted. All three of my children went there, graduated with an associate's degree there. All three of mine. My money went there. I sat on the board there. I donated money there. I have chairs, you know, in the theater named after our family. I'm ultimately disgusted at the leadership of this college. And folks, you're going to find it all throughout Orange County. You're going to find it all throughout LA County. The cowards that have sat on these boards that say that they're one thing privately and publicly, they're afraid to stand up. Carl Goldman, I don't expect you to carry my opinion, but this is something that I see as pretty serious.
Well, I certainly agree with a lot of what you said. I think that, you know, that the board now, because they were taken by surprise with this, needs to act and do some pushback and say to the administration that made this decision, why are you at the position right now of not balancing this out? And I think the board should put strong pressure on that. And we as a community have the obligation to put the pressure on the board to make sure they put the pressure on the administration. Since we ran the article early this week on hometownstation.com, I've heard from many, many community leaders, many of whom, like you, Arif, have donated money to the college, put their kids through the college, and they said, no more. They're done. So the $25,000 they're paying for Angela Davis is going to be far, far deeper in the limited donations they're going to receive from certainly many of the community leaders in town.
She is somebody who was responsible for multiple violent demonstrations. I was in Washington, D.C., as you were on the day of President Trump's inauguration. And the Women's March on Washington, which was a great march. Nice to see people out there screaming and yelling. I get it. But the violence that came afterwards that was integrated with what would later become Antifa and the BLM movement, she and her leadership are behind that. And you're going to invite that into a conservative community. Folks, if you don't stand up and have courage behind the scenes, if you don't sit on these school boards, if you don't go and run for these community college district boards, I know you're bored. You don't want to do it. I know you're retired. I know you said it's time to sit down and enjoy the years and decades of hard work. But I think there's times when you got to stand up. And this seems like this time in history, we have to push back against somebody who is so anti-everything that Northern Los Angeles County seems to stand for. Carl Goldman, how many years in radio?
49 years. But I want to share two
years.
Quick things. One is I totally agree with you that we've got to push back and we've got to stand. But we're not pushing back to eliminate her from speaking, even though I think that was a very stupid decision, because there are many other liberals that I think would be a better served example for our kids.
Yes, I agree.
We want a balance on this. And the second point I want to make is you mentioned Wikipedia. When we ran the article, Wikipedia has no mention of Angela Davis being part of the Black Panthers. So we got pushback on our editorial from a bunch of people who said she wasn't a member of the Black Panthers. Well, that is totally untrue. Wikipedia is following a total narrative that they want to do. Wikipedia is very, very slanted. And I just want to alert everybody to make sure that you are very, very diligent about digging through other sources of information other than just Wikipedia. Because if you put into Google, was Angela Davis a member of the Black Panthers, you'll come up with hundreds of very, very, very good websites, from the Smithsonian to the Historical Society on down, that will confirm that she was a member of the Black Panthers. Now,
I think you will say
she wasn't a member of the Black Panthers. They just leave it out, just like Wikipedia, with many conservatives say they're conspiracy theorists.
So Angela Davis is for everything that disrupts, destabilizes, and dethrones the United States of America. Now, again, if she wants to speak and you want to put somebody like her on stage, I would put her on stage with, I don't know what Charlie Kirk is, in his late 20s, early 30s, certainly less on paper educated by somebody who went and got her PhD in East Germany and was friends with Erich Honecker, who was the chancellor of the Communist Party in East Germany. Okay, fine. Charlie Kirk will tear her up. He will beat every single argument that she has. Will Knowles. These people are very common sense oriented. Let's have a debate. Let's have a lively debate. Charge tickets. I don't care. There's a million ways to pay for something like this. Why would you do this and then disallow any conservatives to come and speak in rebut and pay the same fee, right? Whatever. You're going to pay for this. What do you think is happening to the conservative movement and the pro-American movement in the northern Los Angeles County, one of the old bastions of common sense people?
I think this country has become so divided, and this started before Donald Trump, and then when Trump came in, it made it even further divided. But conservatives have always followed the rule of the Constitution, and except for the really extreme side, have been pretty peaceful. But we've looked, Arif, at what's taken place with the left in the last 4 or 5 years in terms of violence. And then the left and the mainstream media totally ignoring that violence, saying it was mostly a peaceful demonstration. So I think conservatives right now are just, as you said, they need to show some more courage. And we're not advocating to get out there and create any violence. What we're doing is advocating to speak your mind and to be able to let your opinion be known. This is a good opportunity to let College of the Canyons know that they feel that they really want a balanced series of speakers going on, and not just one side, not just one narrative.
It's almost, Carl, as if there needs to be a law that is passed. Or some sort of, I mean, I hate it when they get into and pass another law, but there has to be some way to go in and enforce. If you're going to use public money to bring in such an anti-American, such a racist person, and you're going to use public money to have the KKK or Louis Farrakhan or these right wing, then you're going to have the left wing, right? If you're going to have the Hitler Youth, if you're going to pay to have the Hitler Youth come and speak at your college, and the ACLU is going to defend it, then they need to pay to have somebody who is a conservative that stands up for the Constitution and the Bill of Rights come and speak as well. Why not have a balanced approach? You're bringing somebody from the far right or the far left. Why not bring somebody from the right? I see this as a degradation. And why I'm bringing this up to you guys is simple. You're like, this is the Total Financial Show. What's this all about? Simple. Your financial dollars that you've saved up your lifetime for to send your child to college, and they are now indoctrinating your child with your money that you didn't take that vacation, you didn't buy that boat, you didn't go on that vacation to see your family. No. You saved for one reason, so that your child would have a better future. And now you send them into the lion's den where they're hearing from somebody as much of an avowed racist as this lady. Folks, let me give you the phone number if you'd like to speak to Carl Goldman. 866-870-5752. That's 866-870-5752. Carl Goldman and Jerry Goldman, owner of KHTS Radio, hometownstation.com. I bring them to you because it is happening in their area. They own the local radio station, 49 years in radio. His wife, probably between the two of you, Carl, I'm guessing you're approaching 100 years of radio experience. Incredible. Owning the local radio station since 1990. Yeah. 1990, owning the local radio station. Seeing a lot of changes in northern LA County. What are you seeing is the big trend that is happening in the radio /, I guess, entertainment world? Are you seeing any one or two organizations buying up multiple radio stations like we've heard?
Well, of course, yeah. And then we also heard that the latest is George Soros is buying up stations. He's got about 19 right now to try. And there have been many attempts over the last 20, 30 years to put liberal or have a liberal network out there. They've all failed. And it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. Our industry certainly has changed dramatically with the advent of the internet, and our website, hometownstation.com, gets a tremendous amount of traffic. It's the most read news source in Santa Clarita. So back to Angela Davis for 1 second. We intend to not let this issue die down right now. We're going to keep pounding with behind the scenes, talking to board members, talking to the administration at COC, and continuing to write editorials and cover this story to rally the troops out here to the point where the college has to balance this and say, okay, we made a mistake. You guys are right. We need to, moving forward, put a different perspective or various perspectives in front of our students instead of just one narrative.
Well, according to Transparent California, College of the Canyon's top five administrators, when you add it all up, carry the one, divide by two, you're right in the neighborhood of about $3 million of taxpayer money going to folks that have probably never held, or at least not for very long, held a job in the private sector. And yet they're pushing billions of dollars over the last decade of your money through education, telling them how, telling you how to raise your children and young people and young folks in their 20s. And they're pushing one agenda. That's an incredible amount of money taxpayers are spending to literally undermine their own system. I don't know, Carl, what happened to College of the Canyons? It raised a lot of money. It became one of the premier educational institutions in Los Angeles County, if not Southern California. In fact, up until this moment, I thought it was one of the best buys for your money in the state. And now I'm seeing that somebody had a lapse in judgment, or is this the new normal?
Well, let's hope it's just a lapse in judgment, and let's hope that all of us rallying the way we are will wake them up and realize they can't continue to be tone deaf to the community. They can't be in their own little bubble making decisions that have a long-range impact and are eye-openers for all of us. I think just as COVID was an eye-opener for everybody by having their kids stay home and watch their classes on Zoom and realize what the teachers were teaching, this too is another alarm sounding.
Yeah, it's incredible when the chancellor president is receiving around nearly $500,000 when you add benefits, pay and benefits, $487,000 according to Transparent California. These are not small dollars, guys. These are types of money that could be spent to change a direction. And I think Diane Fierro, she's at $322,000, $25,000 a month to make these kind of decisions. Do you think this is Diane Fierro's or Diane Van Hook? Where do you think the buck is stopping?
I think that Diane Fierro is the one who pushed this, made the decision, and pushed this through. Diane Van Hook, our chancellor, I don't know this for a fact, and I don't know whether Diane Fierro did it for a fact, but all of our sources are pointing to that. I don't think a decision is made at that college without Diane Van Hook's approval, and that has been the case in the past. Now, whether she knew about this or not, I would find it highly unlikely that she didn't know about Angela Davis coming there and that school was going to spend $25,000 to bring her there.
Folks, that's Carl Goldman, owner of KHTS Radio in Northern Los Angeles County, regarding Angela Davis coming to the College of the Canyons, avowed Marxist, communist, hater of white people, and hater of the United States, spending your taxpayer dollars. Stay tuned. We'll talk about that more. Stay tuned after the break. My commentary, what I think is happening, and you can reach out to me right here on AM870 The Answer, 866-870-5752. Thank you, Carl Goldman. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time.
About financial power, the total financial hour. Learn about financial power, the total financial hour. Financial security will help you live the life you dream. Learn about financial power, the total financial hour. Now higher income strategy, learn from Arif Halaby.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for staying with me. I'm Arif Halaby. The total financial hour. 888-99-RETIRE. I need to give that. I know you're getting a lot of phone numbers. You're getting a lot of numbers coming your way. I appreciate your patience, but our phone number to my office, 888-997-3847. That's 888-99-RETIRE. That's 888-997-3847. Okay, so that's our phone number. This week, I'm going to give you towards the end of the hour here, I'm going to tell you what's going on with some of the deadlines that are happening this week as well, because that's kind of important. But I wanted to touch on what we heard both Larry and Carl Goldman talk about. Larry Elder is talking about on a national, certainly statewide and a national level, some big changes coming. A lot of you, I know and I understand you guys push back for lots of reasons, and I understand that. You say things like, oh, Eric, this is a different show. I want to go back to some of the financial things. You understand this stuff is going to affect you financially? If the U.S. loses its ability to work through the power of the United States with the purse, right? You realize we haven't had to fight a major war in 7 or 8 decades because when a country we call a bad guy does something, we take the spigot and we turn it. And that spigot is the banking institutions. It's the ability for them to spend money, to buy things, to sell their oil, to sell their goods and services, their wheat, right? Their fertilizer. It gives them the ability to do things that's difficult if they don't have the money. So we didn't have to send over military people. We didn't have to send over bombs. We just say, you can't spend money. Like a teenager. No, I'm not going to kick you out of the house. You can still live here. You can still eat dinner. But I just took away your credit card and the gas card. So I've restricted your movement. I've restricted your ability to go out, quote, and enjoy yourself. In my teenager metaphor of life. But when you lose that, now the powerful guy or gal on the other side is a country called China. Now, I have been to China 3 times. I love the country. In fact, before Wuhan became a bad word, it was one of my favorite places in China. It's a region. It's like a state or an area, section of China. Beautiful. When I say beautiful, China is stunning. The people on the ground, the normal everyday people, amazing. Don't do business with them. They're notoriously known to be dishonest in business. It's not me. It's the culture. It's the idea. It's common sense, common knowledge. Government, not a fan, not even for a second. I don't like this whole take away your privacy, control you, manipulate you. I'm not a fan of that. But the people on the ground are great people. The society, the way they've structured it, right, where the haves and the have-nots, not a fan. Very similar to India, by the way. Okay, India has layers, stratification, layers of success and wealth. And you can't leave this area because your family, 5 generations ago, were born into it. Tough luck. Your caste system, meaning your station in life, is fixed. Okay, I share that because those are the two most populous countries in the world. Why do those folks try to come to the United States? Why did Indian people from India come to the United States? Why did they open up businesses and struggle and come and then try to bring their family? Why did they do that? Because they know in the United States there is no stratification. You can come from a one-room schoolhouse with no running water in your home, often barefoot, from the South, and become a Condoleezza Rice, sitting at the seat of power in the world. I don't mean in 6 generations. I mean in 1 lifetime. How Condi Rice has become so powerful and influential. Not because she was born to a last name or looked a certain way or lived in that part of town. And example after example. Larry Elder, father, a military veteran, opens up a small business, a little cafe. Mom, a working class lady. Stay-at-home mom, raised her boys. Larry Elder, national fame, if you will, national notoriety, one of the most popular talk shows in all of talk radio, author, etc. Right, you understand that both of those people are African-American. They can come from very low station in life. That's why the United States is so powerful. It's not because of just an idea. It's the actions. And those actions come from the ability to control and manipulate the world. I know it's an ugly word. I'm sorry. Okay. Your feelings better? Okay, let's continue. Control and manipulate the world towards our interests. Now, when that runs amok, surprise, the three-letter agencies, NSA, DEI, right? Let's be clear. There's about 17, some will say 19 different agencies. And as Chuck Schumer so eloquently put it, upset them and you have a bad day. I'm paraphrasing, but you get the idea. Don't upset. Don't tick off the intelligence community. You see, they last well past the next administration. They don't care who's in the White House. It's a figurehead. It's a title. It's nice to see you. Thanks for being here. You're going to be gone in 4 years, maybe eight. See ya. I have a 32-year career here. I have a 40-year career here. I decide, says the civil servants and permanent Washington. I decide who makes those decisions. I decide what gets to be seen by the president. Right? That class of people that's two and three layers deep that never goes away, quote, don't upset them. Well, that's what you're starting to see. So where do I see it impacting you every day? Number one, the increase in the layaway plans. I remember as a kid, we'd go to Kmart. They had a big section in the back of Kmart called layaway. I didn't know what that meant. I don't think my mom and dad ever used layaway. It just meant we didn't buy a lot of stuff. Well, you know, sometimes times were tight. Sometimes times were amazing. But the layaway programs, up their back, right? Where you put a little money down, they take whatever item you wanted and they hold it in the back. And you make payments like a pawn shop. Every 2 weeks you come in, your paycheck, you make a little payment. And then fast forward to Home Shopping Network and those kind of television shows, right? Shopping clubs, et cetera. What do you see? For four easy payments, you can buy this for four easy. It's easy. Easy payments. Why? Because it's easy for them. You're the one making it. That's why it's easy. For five easy payments. Oh, we're going to take away one of those payments. You are? You're so great. Thank you. And now it's four easy payments. It's a credit card with four payments. All right. Fast forward, not to be denied, Wokeism Incorporated called Apple comes along and says, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to give you four easy payments, three easy payments, six easy payments. We're going to help you break it down into easy payments. So now what do? They give you a flexible payment option. Now, you don't institute things like this. You don't bring back the layaway programs when times were good. In fact, when President Trump came in, within months of him being in office, and he's repatriating dollars back to the United States, stripping, if you will, the multinational corporations, when he's bringing soldiers back home and slowing down and renegotiating defense contracts. Ooh, big defense contractors having a problem. The big companies, right? The big four, the big six, depending on how you rank them, start to push back. When you look at their board, retired general so-and-so, retired Air Force colonel so-and-so, huh, what are you doing on that board? You think that was pre-planned? Nah. Next, you're going to tell me the head of the CDC and the FAA and the FDA, the CDC and FDA, they're not going to sit on big pharma's boards, are they? That would never happen. Oh, wait, they did? Pfizer's board has who? Huh. No, I'm sure that's not going to happen. Oh, but don't worry, because 401k loans are at all-time highs. You see, you ask, oh, Arif, how does this impact me? Why does this matter? Because when you have to live in order to pull money out of your 401k retirement plan, right? We've talked about it. You can withdraw 50% or $50,000, and then they take it back from your tax, from your income. So every 2 weeks, they pull it from your income, your paycheck. Every 2 weeks. 3 years, maybe 5-year loan, and then you have to pay it all back. You can pay it all back sooner than if you want. If you don't pay it back, it becomes a taxable event. But surprise, people are forced to do that in order to live. You see, because the only reason you can do a 401k loan versus a withdrawal, a loan, means you're still employed. So if you're still employed and not able to make your pay, It usually means, and stay with me on this, it's just a logical progression. It usually means on the other side of things that things have become more expensive. Because when you're working a job, and it's your current job, and you're making deposits into your 401k plan, and you're getting a paycheck, and then suddenly things are tight, it's because of inflation. The cost of goods and services have gone up. Not because they gave you a pay cut, because most people don't get a pay cut. But eggs went from $4 a dozen to $6 or $9 or $10, right? Gas went from $2 a gallon to $4.50, $5.50 a gallon, right? Car insurance and homeowner's insurance and on and on. Heaven forbid you try to use your gas, right? Your gas energy for your home, your natural gas, right? All of you folks, and I mean left and right, because a lot of people suffered after the Porter Ranch, northern San Fernando Valley, right? When that leak came out and there was problems and people had headaches and some people can't go back to their homes. And the attorneys are making a killing, by the way. They thank you. Their great-grandchildren will go to an amazing college because of you. So don't worry. Who do you think's paying that? I mean, really, who do you think is paying for that natural gas leak? Oh, darn, Southern California Gas Company. Oh, no, they pass it on to you. So you can be somebody that cheers for the little guy, but you're the one that paid the little guy, right? Your gas bill went from $200 a month to $400, from $350 to $900. Who do you think's paying that? And get up on a hilltop in the San Fernando Valley. Get up on a hilltop in the Hollywood Hills, Anaheim Hills, and then just look and see all those houses. And just add, we'll call it $200. $2,900. Oh, wait, $45,000. $45,200, right? You just keep doing the addition. Who do you think is paying for those lawsuits? I'm not saying they're not warranted, but just don't think you're, quote, getting the company. You're getting your fellow American is what you're getting. That's who you're going after. So people have to make payments. So what do they do to pay that? Well, they have to take money out of their 401k. Now, here's some of the biggest issues. I see this over and over again. We feel bad for the worker at the job where they receive a tip. I know I'm treading into water. I'm going to preface this, and it might be, of course, it's going to sound very self-serving. But if you ask anybody that knows me intimately, I am by far in the top 1 or 5%, probably 1% of tippers. That's just who I am. Because I used to be that guy, right? I delivered pizza. I used to work in a place where, you know, tips. That was part of what I did for a little while. So I really appreciate a good tipper. But if you put a mandatory tip on a bill, 15 or 18%, that's it. I don't tip anymore. And I'm the guy that probably would have tipped 2 or 3 times that. And I tell them, are you going to leave this on the bill? They said, oh, well, that's our suggested. If you really want to take it off, my manager will come over and talk to you and see what the problem was. Well, there isn't a problem, but that's your reward, right? Just like God says, if you stand in front of it and you say, look at me, okay, there's your reward. Those of you that are private about some of your donations, private about your gifts or accomplishments, well, you know, your reward is in heaven. Now, not blowing this up to that level, but just kind of think about it in a second, right? When you force somebody to tip, like those little electronic things, remember that? You turn around and you put that on your, on that little, you ever see that on those pads, right? Square and Clever, Clover, whatever they call it. You swipe your card and it spins right around. And it says, okay, there's just a couple of questions for you to answer. And then they turn it around. Do you want to tip 15, 18, 20, 22? I go, well, what's the question? And they say, well, it's just how much you want to give me. Can you imagine? You're just ready to go into surgery. You're all scrubbed up and you got the little hat on. And they just before they put the final little propofol in you, and then you're like, okay, like how much would you like to tip your surgeon and the anesthesiologist today? I'm like, oh, everything? I'm going under in a minute, so you can have it all. Just make sure I come out on the other side. Right here, you're going to tip somebody. They haven't made your food yet. You haven't tried it. You haven't tasted it. You don't know if it's any good. But they're forcing you to give a tip right on the end. Now, I understand they're struggling. They've got electric bills and gas bills. So do I. I get it. But here's my contention. Right? Here's how, when Larry Elder was talking earlier about the inability to even perform math at the grade level, let alone Excel, here's where it comes to your pocketbook. Are you ready? When the prices of goods and services go up, right? Instead of $10 for a hamburger, I pay $15, right? When that goes up and the tip of 15% is still based on that dollar figure, do you understand the tip goes up too? Because it's a percentage of a dollar figure. So for example, if something costs me $10 and the tip is 10%, that's $1. If it costs $100 and the tip is still 10%, that person now receives $10. So as the price of your meal goes up and the drink and the soda and your appetizers, whatever it is at the restaurant, as that goes up, so does the dollars that go in the pocket of the person to whom you're tipping. Now, it doesn't mean you don't want to leave more. I'm okay with both of those things. What I don't like is the dun-dun-dun, here's the tip, and we're all watching. And I'm going to pretend, right? I'm the cash register. I'm the one that just did it. And they look around. They look around. They look up, looking over to the left, look over to the right. And then they quickly glance down. Did he sign it yet? No, not yet. Not yet. Okay. Da-da-da-da. Look around. Have you answered that question yet? What's the question? How much do you want to give me? Are you touching my food? Because if you're going to touch my food, boy, you can have it all. If you're my anesthesiologist, I can give you anything you want. Just make sure I come out on the other side. So don't raise your percentage for tipping based on what your fear is when it comes to the cost for that person, because your costs have gone up in life and you probably didn't receive a pay raise, at least not of any significance. So my point is they are still going to receive more money because as the dollar figure goes up, so do the tips. Okay? So consider that. I'm okay either way. I just want you to know the truth. Right, as we're seeing more and more Americans being forced to put stuff on layaway, to borrow from their 401k, their retirement accounts, just to pay their bills. Right, because here's the status. Rich people have a set of rules that they apply themselves to. Poor people have a set that they apply themselves to. And it's simple, right? Larry and I disagree on something because we were speaking at an event together and he said, Eric, this is the one part I disagree with you. I say rich people make the rules. He says, poor people make the rules, it's basically left-wing people make the rules, whether they're rich or poor. But when we look at this and we say, if rich people make the rules and they're making the rules to benefit themselves, their friends, and their family, have you asked yourself, why do they allow retirement accounts to be borrowed from when you're 30-something years old, 40-something years old? You're not retired yet. Right. So rich people know retirement is for retirement. Emergency account, savings checking, that's for emergencies. Follow me for just a minute. Your house equity is, guess what? For your house. It is not for college. It's not to buy a new car. It isn't to consolidate debt. Poor people are poor, not because they're bad or ugly or out of shape. People are poor simply because they make bad financial decisions, not because they don't make enough money. You see, a lot of us have figured in life, we want to teach our kids to make a lot of money. Let's make a lot of money, get a good job, make a lot of money, get good benefits, make a lot of money. It's about money, money, money. Rich people say, well, that's fine, but you understand that that's what they tax, right? The rules are written to tax, guess what? Your income. So wealthy people, rich people, they say, I want to teach my kids to be wealthy. I don't want to teach my kids to make a lot of money. Of course, ultimately they will. But I want to teach them about wealth principles, which is completely different. So who do you think makes the rules? Poor people or wealthy people? right? So we just have to follow the rules. The great news in the United States of America is because rich people make the rules and the rules apply to everybody. That's why the folks from China and India and Africa and my dad from Lebanon, that's why they all come to the United States. Very few people flock to Australia. Many do, but not the same numbers, not even the same percentages. Right? Australia says, here's what we're thinking, right? The government of Australia, even today, here's what we're thinking. And then they look over their shoulder and they say, what's the United States thinking? Yes, you got it. Okay. We're with them. My problem is across the world, more and more people, more and more countries are not looking over their shoulder to the United States. They're looking to their left and they're seeing China. And they're saying, we don't want to upset them. Because if the United States within 2 years can lose nearly everything that it stands for in world dominance, when it can distract its military with transgender story hour. Folks, this is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of people in the United States who have this dysphoria that think that they want to dress up as women and wear funky makeup and go to the bars and clubs. Let them do that. I don't care what you do. But don't teach my children. What are you thinking? And why aren't you standing up for this? Stand up for your grandchildren, right? Have some courage. Let them call you all sorts of names. It doesn't matter. You just say, folks, you want to dress up like a Vegas showgirl? You go do that. Do it. But you do it around 18-year-olds. You don't do it around third graders. That's sick. And they are twisting you in your own mind and convincing you that you must be some sort of a racist, homophobe, transphobe, whatever their phobe is. You know you're on the right track when the bad guys dislike you. When I was a new policeman and I said, oh my gosh, how many people dislike us? I remember we were at a riot in Westwood. They had just finished showing Boys in the Hood. And all these minority youths come running out of the movie premiere and they were rioting and throwing stuff and... here I am, 22 years old with a helmet and a baton, or maybe I was 23, but right in there, living in my parents' garage, not figuring out what the heck are these people all upset about? They have nicer clothes than I do. They have gold jewelry around their neck. They drive a BMW. I couldn't even spell BMW. I was driving a Ford pickup. I go, what are they so angry about? I have no idea, but they're angry, so they're breaking stuff. So we have to just stand here. So here I am on the skirmish line. These people are yelling and screaming, calling all sorts of names, calling me a racist. I'm like, really? You have any idea who my best friend is? Right? Okay, fine. And here we are watching this crazy transition. And later on, I got back to the station after, I don't know, 12 hours of work. It was 2 or 3 in the morning. And I said to one of the old timers, probably 40 years old. I said to one of the old timers, I said, man, I couldn't believe how many people disliked us. He goes, Arif, when bad guys dislike you, it means you're doing something right. So don't ever change because of somebody liking or disliking you. Pay attention to who dislikes you. And if they dislike you for who you are, then you have to decide if you want to change. If they dislike you for what you do, you have to decide if you're going to change what you do. But if they dislike what you stand for and you're firm in it, then Arif, they're the bad guys, not you. Folks, if you're the one that is standing up to keep these trans folks out of the schools, go and live your life, right? I'm sure we have friends and family, probably, right? That somebody that likes to dress like, Zsa Zsa Gabor, fine, go do it. But you don't come into the elementary schools. And so many of you drink your coffee or your tea and you have your pinky out and you go, oh, that's pretty bad over there. That's pretty bad. Oh, turn that heater up just a little bit. Oh, it's nice. Turn the heater up. Oh, but did you see how, that's so bad over there. That's so bad. Get up, stand up, and stand up for something. Because just like we really talk badly about the people that were racist pigs in the South those Democrats in the 1950s, today people are going to say the same thing about you not standing up. So stand up and be one of the Rosa Parks of today. I'm Arif Halaby. Thanks for being part of the show. This is the Total Financial Hour. I'm Arif Halaby. 888-99-RETIRE. That's 888-99-RETIRE. Give me a call anytime you have any questions. Next week at this time, I'm here. Arif Halaby on the Total Financial Show, on your place for news, talk, and information. Have a great rest of the weekend.
Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour. Learn about financial power, the Total Financial Hour.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.